right. Let's do this.
Huh?
I assume she is. I hadn't heard otherwise. So... I'm very curious. So we're going to actually train to enter the session data next week. I just wanted Amanda to have the data. Maybe you can start dividing it up for next week. So we'll have that ready for next week. But this week I wanted to focus exclusively on the transcript that you Q-sorted for today using the PQS, brand new instrument for everybody. So I'm just interested in gathering people's thoughts about having used it and how it felt. Don't all go at once now. You know, take your turns.
I would say first, the transcript in many ways was difficult to understand. It wasn't as clear as I thought it would be. But
why do you think it seemed difficult?
I mean, first of all, because it's not a recording, it's someone writing it down.
The mass, there's a lot of just indescribable in parentheses or in unintelligible, I think it said.
Inaudible.
Yeah. So a logical point of conversation just jumps somewhere completely else for a couple of times.
Yeah, I definitely got lost on who was speaking a couple of times. Who was it there?
Well, it should be labeled.
It is. But I have to let you want. I had to keep going back to see, like, all right, this is P1. This is what's saying. It didn't flow logically in a sense of, like, okay, this is therapist, this is patient. Like, I guess I assumed it would have. So that was interesting.
Yeah. Well, then you could sound with just like color coding.
Yeah.
Like the therapist could be yellow.
Yeah, you could see.
But aside from that, there were a number. Bunch, a handful of items that I just really had no idea how to answer because I did my best to, educated guess. But I don't know that they were accurate because I didn't have enough information from the transcript itself to...
When you feel as though you don't have enough information, where does that item tend to go then?
Four or five.
Yeah.
For sure, that's what I did.
Okay.
I actually made it easier just putting the ones that were just completely absent in five, and then you have 18 slots in five, so it was enough where it wasn't really a problem at the end of the day.
Okay. What were you?
So when I was coding, I think whatever we used last year, it had the descriptions in the actual
I think I know what you're talking about. So the descriptions aren't in the PQS.
They're not. I was wondering if there was any way that they could put in, because I feel like that would make it so much easier to code without having to go back and forth. And I'm sorry, that's always wrong.
Is there a way to do it easily? Let's think. We have the PDF. Would it work from that?
Yeah. I know how to work out.
You do? Sometimes I've tried that with certain tools and it converts to Word document, but then the text is like they're like image files rather than. Okay, yeah, that's a very good point, Marguerite. I think that might account for the correlations we got with each other. Although they're not that bad, given this is your first time using the instrument. I really wasn't disappointed at all. I was expecting the kind of correlations that you found, but Marguerite has a very good point that if you don't have the descriptors to base your decisions on, it becomes a much more challenging task because you don't really know, you don't have enough information to know what the item is getting at. That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of them in, again, whatever tool we were using last year, like, if it wasn't there, it was...
Time to wake up.
if, like, it wasn't present, it would tell you to put it in the middle as opposed to, like, on the end. Whereas I feel like with this one, there were a lot, like, if this item's, like, not present, you would low it. You would rate it, like, low. So I had to, like...
Yeah, I totally get it. I didn't know that. I mean, I think I had known it a long time ago, and then I forgot. What happened is that Julia, the famous Julia, as in Julia Sort Tool, she is now a fifth-year student on internship.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they get old quickly. you'll see. So what she did was she and her fiance worked on this, and he works at LinkedIn, and they developed the CCQ for Trello, and you know, it works fairly well. But then I went back and I said, "Would you mind having Chris do one for this CPQ?" I mean the PQS and the CAQ, which is the California Adult QSET, which is the adult equivalent of the CCQ, which you guys are using in the first year class. And then the PQS is the adult version of the CPQ, which we were using last year and the year before that. And she said, yeah, sure. But she and Chris didn't spend the time on it that I would have wanted, and they just entered the items themselves without the descriptors to create the PQS. The CAQ isn't an issue because, as you guys know, the CCQ doesn't have any descriptors. It just has the label. So that's easy to do. And the CAQ is identical in that sense. But the PQS is like the CPQ, in which you need the descriptors in order to be able to sort the item reliably. And they didn't do that. So, and I haven't used the PQS since Julia and Chris created it. So I think I might have noticed that when she first created it, and I mentioned it, and then I forgot about it because I wasn't going to use it for a while. And now we're using it, and lo and behold, these descriptors are missing. So how's it look? Testing. But that's a very important thing to have in order for us to be reliable. The more information you have about the item, clearly, the more reliable we're all going to be, because we're all going to see the item in the same way. The less information you have, the more likely it will be that each person will have their own idiosyncratic perceptions or interpretations of that item. And when that happens, reliability suffers, as you can imagine. So we're aiming for a reliability of 0.7. And there was only one correlation among everybody. So I correlated everybody with everybody else. I sent you that output. And there was only one correlation that did that. It was Palak and Taylor.
I see that. That's phenomenal.
And I'm wondering, I mean, I know that you were... I know that you were training Palak on the instrument.
I did not.
No, that was
Amanda.
Oh, Amanda did. Okay, for some reason I thought it was you. You didn't. So here are the correlations. Everybody correlated with everybody else. And if you look at, so these are the first two letters are your first and last initials. So if you look at TP, that's Taylor. And you look at PA, that's Palak. You have a 0.875, which was everybody out of the water. It wasn't even close to anybody else. So I was curious, and I thought I thought you two would help, that you would help Palak on it. No, okay. So it's really interesting. You guys were like sharing a brain or something.
I don't see you ever.
This is a mind meld. It's a Vulcan mind meld or something. I don't know. But that was, that stood out. It really stood out. So we'll see if that pattern persists where you two see things like almost identically. Yeah, wow. You know, everybody else was in the threes and fours basically. And that's sort of what I'm expecting at this level of training. So now when we get the descriptors in there for everybody, it's going to be even better. Promise. Huh? Deepak. I'm not using your nickname for him. Okay. his initials are DS.
Yeah, I got that.
All right.
Yeah, we got 7.0. Wow.
Oh, okay. Yeah, look. Wow. With both Palak and Taylor.
Good job.
You three are just channeling each other. It's really amazing. So we will review some items today as well, but I just wanted to get a general conversation going about the items. So that was a very good point. Thank you for bringing that up. We're going to fix that for next week. I guess that means that everybody then has to copy new Trello boards once the new one is. So there are only 8 of you, so that should work. Okay, thank you, Taylor. Any other comments about? Yes.
I don't know what we can do about it, but I just thought it was very difficult to follow, really reading it the first time. Not really sure why. Maybe I just couldn't get into. Not that this is like a novel that we're supposed to be like fascinated by, but like just.
So it's a page turner for.
Right. I mean, but I just found myself. Not latching on to it, you know, something wasn't sinking, and I don't know if that's going to take time as I read more transcripts to get accustomed to, but that's just something that I noticed for this one.
Right.
And that kind of made doing the assignment a little difficult for me, because I had to find myself having to keep go back and like reread it over and over again.
Do you guys make notes in the transcript? You print it out and make notes, or what was your strategy?
I was just looking at it on my
laptop. I was afraid to ask. We're allowed to print them.
Yeah, as long as you shred them, you know, when you're done.
Okay, do
a shredder. You can hand them back to me.
Can we just like rip them?
Yeah, you can rip them. That's fine. These transcripts were given to me 12 years ago, and they're from a German sample. So these were translated into English. And I'm wondering whether that might explain some of it. You think?
Yeah. Because there was yes, it was YOUN or YOUH or I don't know if you're saying or I don't know if words.
Like you're starting every sentence with you.
Right.
So that explains some of the awkwardness in the language, probably.
For sure. Yeah.
But what I can do is for next week, I can send out a transcript that was actually started out in English for you guys, so we can do that as we continue training. All right. So, yes.
So I downloaded the Word document, and it's like you said, just a picture. So
that's painful, man. I wonder whether we could make it easier for you.
They're just out of order. That was the issue that I was running.
Well, there are 8 of you, right? And there are 100 items. This isn't rocket science, right? So if each of you did 12 items, right? 12 times 8 is what? 96. So there'd be 4 left. So you can do the extra 4 if you like. So let's assign 12 items for each person to do, and you just put it into a Word document and then send it to Amanda.
So I'll actually I'll make a Google Doc and send that to everybody, and I'll do items 1 to 100, and then I'll just add them there, and then I'll just have it.
So I think we should probably assign the items now, right? So Taylor would be 1 to 12, 13 to 24. 25 to 48, or yeah, right. Sorry, 36. What?
I can do that one too.
36, 37 to 48. Amanda, you're 49 to what? 60. Deepak is 61 to 72. Matt is 73 to 84. And Brian is 85 to 96. Okay. And everybody has a copy of the PDF of the items? Okay. If not, I can resend that. So that should take care of it. Then, Amanda, you'll do 97 to 100, and that'll just relieve some of the burden on Amanda.
So when do you want that to be done?
That should be done, like, sooner rather than later, right? So let's do that by Sunday night. Is that possible? Can everybody do that? Yeah. Okay. Because then you'll have from Monday to Thursday to do the one transcript I'll send out. And this one should be easier because it started out in English. And it should be easier also because you'll have the descriptors of the items to help you. If you could send it to me by Thursday morning. Is that okay? I mean, if you can get it to me Wednesday night, that would be better, but Thursday morning, I could still pull it out of the fire. What?
That stuff, the ML stuff, we're not worrying about yet.
ML?
Yeah, the bag.
Oh, the ML bag. Yeah, so Amanda's going to take that bag and she's going to distribute the... Yes, these are the session data, because you know we need to divvy it up anyway. Amanda's going to work on that, and then I'm going to show people how to enter those data next week. All right. Yeah, Qualtrics still owes me data.
They owe you money and time.
Yeah, they kind of do, but. Just make a note of that. Okay. So, as you can see, the correlations are pretty much in the fours. Here's some more. So, for example, here, like, Deepak and Brian do not see eye to eye.
Oh, no.
There's no bromance going on there. All right. So that that's kind of cool. What I did was, I mean, just on my own, I took the mean of everybody's correlations, and I was curious to see who I left it in my office, but I was curious to see who had the highest correlation with everybody else, and so I have that. It's in my office. So anyway, as we move along, that's one of the ways I will determine, you know, who's getting it and who's not, the coding system. The other way is this way. The other output that I sent you, and so this is cool. Those of you who've been with me for a while already know how I do this, but the first years will not. So this is everybody's, and on the next, it continues on to the next page. I couldn't fit everybody on here, but so, you know, Brian, Eli, Taylor, Palak, Margarita, and the rest are on the next page. But these are your ratings. And these are the rows, right? So what I did was in SPSS, you can sort the entire database according to a particular variable. And this variable here is a very interesting variable. STDV stands for standard deviation. So what is a standard deviation? It's the distance between each individual and the mean. So basically SPSS takes the mean of everybody's ratings for each particular item. And then it looks at the distance between that mean and each individual's rating. So the rating, or the items with the most disagreement amongst it, will have the highest standard deviation. Does that make sense? So what I did was I sorted the file according to standard deviation. And so starting with the biggest standard deviation all the way down to the least standard deviation. And I thought we could talk about the items on which everybody disagrees the most, which would be these items here. So these first nine items have a standard deviation of two or more. I thought, that's interesting. There's a lot of disagreements. Maybe we can talk about those items as a way of starting a conversation about what these items actually mean. I mean, it seems a little bit more scientific than just walking in and saying, okay, who had problems with which items? You know, and you guys just looking at me. So, let's do that, shall we? Item 93. Therapist is neutral. This had the most disagreement, this item had the most disagreement of any item. So if you just look, eyeball it, okay? Brian put it in one. Most uncared, this therapist couldn't be as more non-neutral as possible. Most non-neutral therapist ever. And then you look at Eli, this is the most neutral therapist ever. 1 in 9. You can't be more bifurcated, right? Taylor put it in 2, Palak in 2, Margarita's right down the middle in 5. Let's look at the rest. MF, who's MF? Matt? Matt was in 8. Deepak was in 4, pretty much down the middle, and Amanda was in 2. So you see, there was a wide range of responses to therapist is neutral. Now, given the fact that you didn't have the descriptors to read, that explains some of the confusion, I think. Well, so let's read the descriptors and see if it sheds any more light on people's responses. And I can also explain to you what therapist is neutral means from my own experience. Okay. Those of you who've never seen a patient would have difficulty with that item, right? What does neutral mean? Place toward characteristic end, if therapist tends to refrain from stating opinions or views of topics patient discusses. Therapist assumes role of neutral commentator, and the patient's view of matters is made preeminent in the dialogue. For example, therapist asks how it would be for the patient if she, as therapist, approved of his expressing his anger, and subsequently inquires how it would be for him if she disapproved. Now, contrast that with a therapist who says, I don't like what you did. You're still using drugs. That's bad for you. You know you're not supposed to. You're ruining your brain. Right? So expressing an opinion about it, that's not being neutral at all. Right? Place toward uncharacteristic direction if therapist expresses opinions or takes positions, either explicitly or by implication. For example, therapist tells patient that it is very important that he learn how to express his anger, or comments that the relationship the patient is in right now is not a very good one, and that she should consider getting out of it. Neutrality is not synonymous with passivity. Therapists can be active and still maintain a neutral stance. So it's not an activity-passivity variable. It's a neutrality variable. Can the therapist remain neutral, or does the therapist share opinions, right, and beliefs independently of the therapist, of the patient? So the patient says, you're acting just like Donald Trump,
right?
You're an authoritarian, horrible person. The therapist says, well, actually, I'm actually a registered Democrat. I would never vote for Trump. And then there's an argument that ensues. So you can see how forming an opinion might have a different implication for the patient than if the therapist went with it and said, okay, you feel that I'm like Donald Trump. How do you feel that way? What have I done that's made you think that has made you think that about me? You know, trying to explore with the patient what it would mean. Eli.
I think are you asking, should I talk about whether I think the therapist is neutral or not, or do you want to answer that?
I'm not asking a question, but...
Oh, I just wanted to... I thought the therapist was so neutral, according to that definition.
So they did not share opinions?
No, not at all.
Brian?
I thought she had a lot to say about her previous relationships.
The therapist?
Yeah.
Maybe you mix up.
I don't think the therapist said anything. I think
very open about the relationship and wasn't necessarily a point.
Okay, so this is great. Yeah. This is exactly the kind of discussion I want to have, but with one additional element. I want you to back up and support what you're saying with actual lines from the transcript.
With evidence.
I want evidence-based arguments here. You have it, Paula? Supporting neutrality or non-neutrality?
Non-neutrality.
Not in a what? Not in a very nice way.
I literally starred this, and I wrote comment on behavior. It says, I don't blame you for hiding your eyes again. Well, isn't that interesting? So right there, they're taking a position on the client's behavior. So
the therapist said, I don't blame you for...
What's the significance of writing me a letter?
That's not non-neutrality.
Yeah, I think he's just like,
you're just asking for a meaning. What does it mean? What's the significance of you writing me a letter? That's not being non-neutral. That's not expressing an opinion. That's actually trying to gather information.
Yeah. I think the therapist might have felt a little cold.
I think I found
one. Inresponsive, but not
Please.
Necessarily opinionated.
Of how you're
coldness is different from opinionated. I agree
right.
with
That's
Matt
right.
on that.
So, of how your marriage went, but at least you said you felt more like more of a living property, the way you ought to live. Now, that's 9 some years ago. Okay, here's what I'm left with in unrecognizable. You straightened me out. The 9-year interval in which you're a widow, as far as I'm right understand, I'm going to grant you a dynamic interpretation that there's still areas in your sexuality that you are confused. All right, will you accept that?
I don't think that's... Why is that not neutral? That's stating a fact. Or
it's offering
the
theory.
No, that's... So we would call that an interpretation.
Right, that's an interpretation. I wouldn't say it's a judgment.
Yeah. I guess I was looking for more judgments. I think we read that.
Right, like neutral would be, like, if he was being neutral, he would express, if he was being
non-neutral,
he would express judgment, either positive or negative, about the fact that someone wrong with their sex.
He would see add up something to this.
I don't know, I guess just the phrase, like, will you accept that? Did like so non-controls, like this is what's going on, just accept that for
what it is. If he said, do you accept that? Would that change it?
A little bit. definitely the phrasing of just like accept that seemed very non-neutral. I think there's another one.
It depends about what we're talking about. Meaning, like, let's say the patient clearly has severe depression and he says, will you just accept that you have depression already? The patient says no, and it's like,
I can't treat you.
Right, then I can't treat you. So
I think we'll accept that just means, like, does this make sense to you?
Yes, that's how I read it.
Yeah.
That's how I read it also. It's also hard to say without the audio because we don't know the tone of, the therapist. But.
So let me describe the difference between an interpretation and being not neutral. So therapists of a particular theoretical orientation try to help the patient understand themselves better by applying a particular understanding to that patient's thoughts or feelings. So it sounds like maybe you're angry about the not getting a pay raise because that's how your father treated you when you were a child. He didn't give you an allowance. And you harbor that anger from childhood and you apply it to your boss now. So that's an interpretation. That's not being not neutral. Not neutral would be like, I hate the Yankees. I hope they lose. There's no interpretive value to that statement, right? It's a belief or an opinion that the therapist is expressing that the patient could do without, right? It's not helping the patient understand themselves better.
So, just so I'm understanding, the difference between like a neutral statement and a, like interpretation is whether or not it's like applicable to their lives, almost?
Yeah. Whether it's in the service of treatment.
So even something that is like a negative interpretation of like, you're wrong about this is still neutral because, well, I guess wrong, like, I guess the example, the thing I read is like, this is, something you're dealing with your sexuality, even though it's not positive, it's still an interpretation and therefore it's still a neutral statement.
Yeah. Now, let's say a patient says, I hate Donald Trump. And therapist says, I hate Donald Trump too. Horrible guy. Okay, so the therapist just made a self-disclosure.
Okay.
but it's not in the service of helping anybody, just sharing an opinion. I mean, you could argue, okay, so the therapist did that to boost the therapeutic alliance with the patient.
And that wouldn't be neutral because it isn't any therapeutic value, it's just adding to the conversation.
I mean, if the therapist did that, they could argue that they're trying to increase the alliance with the patient, mm-hmm. but it's not being neutral. You're trying to improve the therapeutic alliance through non-neutral means.
So that would be like a one or two?
Yeah.
Okay. Because they're not saying like, yeah, some people hate Trump, some people hate...
Right, or let's explore, you know, why you might hate Trump so bad,
right.
so but much.
Because they said something that was so like, extreme.
Yeah, let's explore that. It seems like you have a lot of feelings around the president. Let's talk about that. That's different from... Yeah, I hate Trump too. Boy, he's a horrible person, right? So, okay, that doesn't really serve the patient at all.
I feel like I found one. When I read this, like, this particular line, like, influenced the way I coded a lot.
Okay.
So the therapist said, "We'll see how you learn to waste time, and then I'll teach you some better tactics at it, and then we'll see if." Really worth anything. The patient says, "I don't waste time." And he says, "But you are, and you're very aware of it too. You're making a very lucid description, which is interesting." I don't know. I think I read that as like very like condescending.
It is condescending. I think you're right about that. But is it non-neutral? The way we're defining non-neutral. He's sharing it. Okay, so he is sharing an opinion. All interpretations are opinions, right? He's doing it very forcefully.
Which is, I don't know.
I know, it rubs me the wrong way, too.
Which is why, I mean, I put it in the 5 because, like, I think most of it was fairly neutral, but there were a couple of instances like this one where I was like,
yeah. Therapist tends to refrain from stating opinions or views of topics patient discusses. Therapist assumes role of neutral commentator and the patient's view of matters is made preeminent in the dialogue. Therapist asks how it would be for the patient if she, as the therapist, approved of his expressing his anger, subsequently inquires how it would be for him if she disapproved. And then, not neutral, takes positions either explicitly or by implication. For example, therapist tells patient that it is very important that he learn how to express his anger, or comments that the relationship the patient is in right now is not a very good one, and that she should consider getting out of it. It's almost like giving advice. So making an interpretation is very different from giving advice. So an interpretation would be, let's explore, you know, like why you're in this bad relationship. I think it might make you feel safe and secure because it's very similar to the relationship that you experienced with your mom. All right, that's an interpretation. Advice is you should get out of this relationship. It's horrible for you. Why don't you find somebody who's better for you? You're better than this. That's kind of like advice giving. Amanda.
And she's like clearly like opposed to it, and he's still like,
so he's still saying like, this is better for you, and we should do something else, and I'm going to teach you how to do it.
Right.
So that was
Yeah. So I would agree with that. So you wouldn't put this item in a 9.
Right. And I mean, I wouldn't put it in a 2.
Maybe a 2 and 8. I'm just,
maybe a 7. Deepak.
I know that I put a 4.
You what?
I put 4.
4, okay.
For this particular one, but, and I don't know, let me just ask a question first, meaning non- saying that non-neutral would be stating an opinion of something that has absolutely nothing to do with the topic of therapy?
Well, it might not have nothing to do with it. My example of patients saying, I hate Donald Trump. And the therapist says, I hate Donald Trump too. It's not an interpretation. It's just siding with the patient. It's like agreeing with the patient. Yes, that would be non-neutral.
So then, can you give an example of something that would be non-neutral but has to do with what they're actually like? Has to do with the topic of the conversation, like the actual meat of the therapy?
Well, from a psychodynamic point of view, everything has to do with the meat of the therapy. You know,
right. Okay, so then in that case, then would this be one? So when they say that. Right, so the patient's like, I love being married, and then the therapist is like, well, listen, let me say right off the bat, I don't know that your marriage would last anyway. Like, when I read that, I was like,
right.
wait a minute. It's like,
that was the other thing.
Calm down there. Take a step back.
That's, that's definitely
true. And he was like, because neither of us would know that, and the patient was like, as if like, so that was something.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want to make sure that we're not confusing non-neutrality with condescension and
because
coldness.
It's still tone-based a little bit. Was
that a student that was conducting this?
I don't know. I mean, this is a German session.
Where did we get
this? From a researcher in Germany.
Okay, so it's not from the clinic.
Not unless the clinic was in Germany at the time.
But I think that it could border on non-neutrality because, like you said, the therapist is giving an opinion on something that, like, I don't see how that could help the patient at all.
Well, this is more confusing too, because isn't that like an interpretation? Like, I'm interpreting that your marriage would have lasted anyway.
Yeah.
Who said he doesn't know? But he is very clearly saying that. Let me say right off the bat that I just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's an opinion. Really, it's an opinion. It's not an interpretation. Because he's predicting into the future what he doesn't know. Right?
I'm thinking, just to make it a little bit clearer, like, after he said the part like this, most will never know, and then if he said something like, because I think, like, not knowing something is difficult for you, or, like,
Got it?
I will continue to work at it.
Yeah, look, you're not going to get it just today. It has to gradually seep in over weeks. And we're going to be training on this instrument for weeks, not days. So, yeah. Yeah. I happened on this a few years ago, and it's been really helpful, I think, in jump-starting conversations about troublesome items. So let's go to the next one, 51. Therapist condescends to or patronizes the patient. So here we have 7-1-1-2-1. So Brian's the outlier here.
I have no clue. Like,
I actually, given everything that you guys are pointing out, I think it makes sense. Right? This guy is very condescending, right? And then let's look at the other three. 7, 2, and 6. So Matt and Brian were right, both gave a 7, and Amanda wasn't too far behind at a 6. So you guys were picking up this guy's condescending attitude. Most of you put it in 2. So do you guys see where this guy was condescending and kind of patronizing? So the item says, Play Store characteristic end, if therapist seems condescending toward patient, treating him or her as if less intelligent, accomplished, or sophisticated. This may be inferred from the manner in which therapist delivers comments or offers advice. Remember, offering advice would be non-neutral. Plays toward uncharacteristic direction if therapist conveys by his or her manner, tone of voice, or comments that he or she does not assume an attitude of superiority. This patient was pretty heavy-handed in a lot of what he said to the patient. So I think a 6 or a 7 is quite warranted. Everybody got that? That makes sense? Should we go on to the next one? The next one is item 12. Silences occur during the hour. Place toward characteristic end if there are many periods of silence or significant pauses during the hour or a few extended periods of silence. Place an uncharacteristic direction if there are few silences. Note that brief pauses in speech should not be rated as silences unless they are very frequent or longer than several seconds. So you can see the kind of qualitative nature of this, right? Several seconds, what does that mean? 3 seconds, 4 seconds, right? It just should be kind of a sense that you get about it. So what do we have? We have Brian in 6, Eli in 1. So meaning no silences, people are talking nonstop.
That's what it seemed like.
Okay.
I have no sense of it. Yeah.
Taylor in 7, Palak in 6, Margarita in 2. So Eli and Margarita are seeing things the same way. And we've got Matt right down the middle, and Deepak and Amanda seeing it as characteristics. So you see the wide range.
Would they write like 30 second pause? Like, would
they have like, yeah, they wrote one pause, right?
Yeah. What?
Kind of toward the end. You see where like the 30-minute mark is? Right before that. And then it says side, minutes 40 to 45.
Yeah.
That's a long pause.
That is really long.
That is painful. As a
that really is. That's
I was proud of like 1 minute and 12 second silence the other night.
Yeah. Who's your supervisor?
Dr. Dean. I wanted to keep the silence. It was helpful for her.
It shouldn't be like a stalemate, like, okay,
no,
it's a chess match, but it's like you want the patient to come up with what's on their mind.
And it was part of, it was specific to this client. But anyway, yeah, so those like, I guess those little like, parentheses where it says like minutes 40 to 45, we'll pay more attention to the people that rated it low.
How would that be minutes 40 to 45 if it was just after it ends at 45? At the very end it says 45 minutes.
Okay. And there's also like that long pause.
There are a number of long pauses. So if you put this item in 6 or more, good job. But less than that, you should consider moving it up. right? Let's do one more, and then I wanted to get to Palek's email message. Remember your email message? Oh, okay. So item 76. Let's do that one. Therapist suggests that patient accept responsibility for his or her problems. It's kind of a non-neutral thing to do, right? Yeah. It's interesting. All the items we've talked about, except for silences, have a theme. Placed or characteristic direction of therapist attempts to convey to the patient that he must take some action or change somehow if his or her difficulties are to improve. For example, therapist comments, let's look at what you may have done to elicit that response from another person. Placed toward uncharacteristic end, if therapist actions are in general not aimed at persuading, okay, patient to assume greater responsibility, or if the therapist suggests the patient already assumes too much responsibility. You're taking on way too much there, guy. You need to lighten the load. That's advice. It's not an interpretation. But this is all about accepting responsibility and or not accepting responsibility, right? So let's see what we have here. We have 61336. And 7, 3, 8. Amanda put it quite high.
Too high.
But he does try to get this patient to accept responsibility about time, right? Right. No, we don't know what theoretical orientation this is, right? We can't assume. What? Why?
I feel like it's not CBT.
What makes you think that?
Because aside from that comment, it wasn't particularly directed.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, I think for various reasons, we'll be moving away from using this set for practice purposes. So I just tell you right now, it is a psychodynamic session. So you're right about that.
Which makes
his forcefulness in trying to get this patient to accept responsibility very atypical, a very atypical intervention. Given this modality, right? So where do you think this guy belongs, this therapist belongs in this item?
Let's stick with six.
Huh?
Let's stick with six.
Six would be
I say six or seven, maybe. People agree with that, get on board with that? All right. So this is how the training is going to go. Does this feel comfortable? Does this feel okay? You feel like you're learning? And I guess the second and third years can say whether it's helpful in your actual treatment of patients. In other words, not at all. Now, I've had supervisees who have told me that they're in session and they're working with the patient, and these items come up in their mind as they're working with the patient to get them to think about whether they're doing something psychodynamic or not. So.
I can see that.
What?
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So in that sense, some people feel it could be helpful for their own personal training. So let's move away from this. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the poster, which is, the deadline's coming up quickly, right? It's early December. Have they posted an actual deadline yet? Okay. But based on previous experience, we know that it's, yeah. So we've got a little over a month and a half, right? To come up with an actual abstract. So, Kalik, you want to refresh people's memories about your idea?
So I was thinking of using the Chai PTSD symptom scale.
From the Manhattan Project, right? It's one of the scales that you entered? Yeah. So whenever we propose a study, we're looking at a minimum of two variables. So that would be one variable. What would be the other variable? When you talk about intergenerational, what comes to mind for me is parent to child. Unfortunately, in this data set, we don't have any parent data. We didn't collect any data at all on the parents, strictly on the children. So we're restricted in that sense to child data. Now, so the one variable is very nice and we could use that, but we need another variable to relate it to correlate it with. For example, I'm just throwing this out. Let's say we want to look at childhood trauma and we wanted to relate it to reflective function. So how these children are able to reflect on their experiences. Does trauma interfere with that self-reflective capacity? That would be something to explore. Just as an example.
I was actually thinking about that. So the second scale after that, I was going to ask, is the words that we received from a single child, or is it every questionnaire was administered to some different child?
Say that again? Yes. Well, every child in the study got the same packet of questionnaires.
Let's say you had one with like code 122. 122 is the ID number for one child.
So then we can kind of correlate it with objective presentation when he read and they're describing themselves.
Okay. So. On how they represent themselves. So how it affects their self-concept. How do people feel about that idea? Now, what it's going to require is... So Palik's idea is not as straightforward as it sounds, because unlike the paper and pencil questionnaires, the ORI, the Object Representation Inventory, which asks that question, is text, right? So there's text, and that text is going to need to be coded. So it's not a simple answer of like just, it's a number, it's text. So we have to figure out how to code the text. Right? Now, a very simple way of coding would be, is the text about describing oneself positive or negative? That would be pretty easy to do, I would think. Or positive, negative, or neutral. And the hypothesis then would be that the greater the traumatic experience in childhood, the more negative the self-representation. That's the hypothesis.
Taylor. I think about, like, one response I got, I think it said, like, I'm pretty funny, but I'm also lazy. Funny is a positive.
Right.
Self-experience. Yeah. So that'd be hard.
So that would be maybe neutral or mixed?
Yeah.
So maybe we have a four-tiered system, a four-category system, positive, negative, neutral, or mixed?
Maybe making like a list of adjectives that appear a lot and where they would fall under. So like some of them said, like, I'm not the best kid, but I'm also not the worst. Because that'd be neutral.
Yeah.
I'm funny, smart, and beautiful. Positive.
Positive.
Like, stubborn, lazy, and I suck. Negative.
Now, something else to do would be, so far we've talked about...
There's never...
Can you throw me that red... Thanks. Yes! So, one is bad, two is mixed, three is neutral, four is good. But another way of looking at it might be several scales. So there's the good scale, where one is mildly good and, I don't know, three is very incredible. Or the bad scale, one is mildly bad, three is horrendous. And I don't know that you could do that with mixed or neutral, but at least with good and bad, you can break it up into separate scales. We call that dummy coding in a way. You could do that, or right in the middle, right? So, one might be mostly bad. Two might be, call that neutral. Three is mostly good. Maybe have three scales. Combine the neutral and mixed scales into a mixed scale, where neutral would be the middle anchor point. I'm just making this up, but I mean, if you want to invest the time in this, we could work on that. And Palak, if you wanted to be first author, it's your idea. Interesting that the non-doctoral student is the one taking the lead. What I would do is I would see if there are scales or rating or coding systems that are already out there that might be trying to capture what we're doing here. Because if there are, I don't want us to reinvent the wheel. You know, if there's already an instrument, a coding system that already exists, then, you know, it's we're just reinventing something that's already been invented. But if you can't find anything, then we can make our own system. How's that sound for people? And then everybody here in the room would be a co-author. And we'd probably do it alphabetically. I would be last on the list. And Palak would be first. And if someone wanted to kind of help Palak along, they would be maybe second author. So we'd step outside the alphabetical order. That's typically how we've done it. So, does that grab people? Or you having a different idea? Or... Yay, Palak. So why don't we start thinking about that? And I guess the next step would be if you could take a look and see if there are other instruments out there that have measured the, what would you call it, the valence of adjectives. I think there is something out there.
Can you
What?
I don't have to tomorrow. Remember the pentagram where it's like literally. Okay.
Literally, oh, I know.
Word, like it literally takes like a transcript and it goes word by word and it does this whole awesome like.
Right.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah. Pennebaker.
Yeah. Pennebaker. Yeah. Pennagram.
It's Pennebaker. I did a like a linguistic analysis with Tom.
So doesn't that like
for Trump's tweets actually?
Yes, I remember that. So wouldn't that be something?
Well, what does that yield though? Does that yield valence?
Because
that's what we're talking about here.
Positive, no, I don't think it does. It's just like the amount of times you use a certain word.
Rates, I believe, how emotionally connected you are to your writing or your verbal speech.
Okay. What we could do, I co-authored a paper a while ago that included an instrument that is very similar to what we're talking about. And what I'll do is I'll send you the article. Actually, I can send it to everybody and take a look at the instrument and see whether maybe we could use that instrument for this purpose. Apply it to this idea. How's that sound? You guys are the ones who are entering the data and typing in the responses, so you would know whether it would work or not. I'm not the one entering the data, so I'm less of a candidate to figure that out. Does that make sense? All right, we're done. And I will send you the transcript tonight to work on for next week. And don't work on it though until after we get the revised Trello boards.
Yeah, okay. So I sent everybody the Google Doc to input their description.
Oh, yeah.
Then I sent the PDF. So you don't have to worry about that. I sent it tonight.
You sent what?
The PDF. Of the PDF.
Oh, of the PQS. Okay. Thanks, Taylor.
Me? What did I do?
I thought you said thanks.
I said thanks.
Yeah, so I'm saying thanks back.
Oh,
we're very polite people.
You should say you're welcome.